cliffcentral.com. Future CEOs on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs here on Cliff Central. My name is Gareth Armstrong. It's a great pleasure to be with you this afternoon. Once again, we have a fantastic guest here in studio, and it's not just a guest, but rather a friend of ours, someone who's... You were one of the founding contributors here at Cliff Central.
I was.
BC, it's welcome here. Welcome back here.
Let
me just quickly introduce the show to those who have never heard us before. So if you can say yes to, are you a future CEO? If you can say yes to that question, well, then this really is the show for you. What we try and do is we try and help all young people who, and young maybe at heart as well, who are looking to grow their businesses or fast track their careers. We have conversations with people who are doing that, who have done that. We try and close that gap, also expedite the process for you. Mon Rabisi, you are... I think I described you a little when we were interacting a few months ago as a mogul, a business mogul. That's really what you are, isn't it?
Stop it. I like it.
Yeah. Stop it some more.
Yes.
Just please introduce yourself to our future CEOs community and don't be shy. Brag a little bit because there's more to you than meets the eye. I know that your public profile is not always what's going on. So
no, that's the aim.
Okay, understated.
Yes. Always undersell and over-deliver.
Okay.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm home, man. Like, I feel like I can just take off my socks and, you know, just put my feet up.
You absolutely can.
Awesome. Yeah, so where do I start? You know, I fell into business by mistake.
Okay.
So I'm a sports guy through and through. I love sports. I'm really passionate about any sport with any ball that uses any kind of movement.
I'm going to interrupt you. Are you the same individual then who is on last man stands here? The cricket. Because I see that you have a ranking, a world ranking for batting and a world ranking for bowling. You've only played two games though.
Oh, wow.
Would you like to know what your batting ranking is in the world?
I'd love to know.
You are 74,756th in
that
the world.
That sucks, Garrett. That sucks.
In the world. I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of people playing. That's pretty good.
Oh, man. I thought I was in the hundreds at least, you know?
Sorry. I'm very, very sorry. So you are a sportsman, but you've only played two games here, so I don't know if you continue to play. You're going
to
get better.
Yeah, no, I have to. I think for my reputation's sake, I need to get back onto the field.
Okay, so you're a sportsman?
Yeah, so I love sports, and business is something I really fell into, you know. And I decided, well, I kind of like what I'm doing, you know. Mm-hmm. I kind of like this space. It kind of teaches me a lot, and it's the quickest way to pass information through.
Okay.
You know, and that's how I really fell into business. I'm into a lot of businesses, like you said.
Yeah.
Some good, some not so good. Some test you, some don't really test you. Mm. But I believe that you really can do a lot of things in a lot of businesses.
Now, that goes against a lot of what we sometimes hear from guests here in studio, where they speak about focus.
Yeah.
Make sure you do one thing and do it right.
Right.
I think you are doing one or two things and you're doing them well.
Yeah.
But you're able to do those one or two things in multiple places.
Right. It doesn't take away from that. You know, do one thing and do it right. Mm. My thing is people. Do people right and do that really well. And those are the people that I invest in. So I invest in people, not the businesses. Mm-hmm. Because if you invest in the people that are passionate about those businesses, I don't have to teach them business principles.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if there's a problem within my organization, I don't look at where the problem comes from. I look at the people that are handling that problem.
Sure.
So that is my investment. Mm. You know, I always say companies don't run companies. People do.
Yep, absolutely.
And that's my motto. So if I've got you, for example, on the radio platform, then I say, okay, right, let me look after Gareth, right?
Yeah, and he will look after
the
platform.
Exactly.
Yep.
So it really is as simple formula as that. So, you know, I'm in food and beverage, I'm in retail, I'm in
is publishing.
Advertising agency type of work, you know. So But I strongly believe that they're all linked. Mm. You know, every business has a call it a profit and a loss. That kind of equates to you know, it's got a bank balance or a balance sheet, yeah, of some sort. So yeah, there is a positive, there is a negative. There's money coming in, there's money coming out. How do we balance that? So it really, I try to keep it as simple as that. And that's where, for me, the focus remains.
Well, look, you're in good company, and I've said it quite regularly here on the show, but Mark Cutifani, CEO of Anglo American,
right, I mean,
that's a big business. He, and I quote him all the time, he says business and by association or... I'm butchering it now, but let me say this, let me
summarize it.
Business is all about people.
Yeah.
That's what he's... it's simple for him.
Yeah.
And if he has the right people in the right places doing the right things, he's going to have a successful business. And that's why he sits where he sits,
yeah,
in such a large organization.
Yeah. Now for me, that is very correct. And who am I to question that? I think the one thing is we don't ask a lot of questions as business people. We claim we know a lot. But, you know, for me, they always ask me, so who's your mentor? Mm-hmm. And I have so many mentors, you know. I look for information. I consistently and aggressively seek knowledge,
mm,
from different people at different times. So to say, have I got a mentor? No, I don't. I have mentors.
Yeah.
You know,
and some of them, I'm pretty certain, are not always people that you sit face to face with.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, you know, I don't want to mention names, but even within the Cliff Central team, I can sit with somebody there within the you know, the people who started it,
mm,
for hours, mm, purely because I can suck as much information from that person as possible.
And know? And not in a selfish, no, self-centered way, no, just by a simple association.
It's just knowledge. They have it,
yeah,
and I want it, you know. And asking the questions and also not being big-headed to want to, you know, drive the conversation. I know how clever I am.
Mm.
You know, that's never going to go away. But it's not taking anything away if I understand where you come from, what your journey is, what it took for you to get to where you are, and where we're going.
But that's the essence of business, to understand other people and what their needs are and how to furnish those needs. That's really the bottom line.
That is the bottom line, you know. And you look at success formulas around the world, you know. Richard Branson's not into music, but he's got Virgin Records.
Mm.
You know, Virgin Gyms. He doesn't look like he's a gym fundi or even airlines, you know. All those kinds of things. Would you say now they don't belong in the Virgin Group because the man himself doesn't look like his businesses? You know, so for me, that's the learning curve, is to say, let's look at the success formulas. Where has this thing worked? And how has it worked?
I think that the secret here is, though, and maybe we must go back into your journey and you must describe it a little bit.
We're
for
sharing
us
a lot of secrets here.
Yeah,
G?
Yeah. And that's the point of the show. It is to exactly what you say: have conversations with people and learn from them. So thank you for sharing your secrets. But I think that the real clincher here is that you need to figure it out as quickly as possible, probably,
yep,
fail hard and fast quite quickly in the beginning,
yep,
learn what that formula is that works for you, but don't try and do it in 10 different places. Do it in one place, and then you can begin to,
right,
extrapolate or pull it into other businesses and other areas.
Correct, correct. I think what you've just said is very, very key. Learn quickly, make mistakes fast.
Mm.
You know, for me, I learn mistakes daily. Some mistakes, you call them failed businesses.
Mm.
You know, I for example, we just did a restaurant operation in Lesotho.
Okay.
Went into partnership with someone there, 2.8 million rand later, it was a flop. You know, the person thought they owned the whole thing, it belonged to them, and we now need to listen to them.
Okay.
And that wasn't the case. You know, I have the food and beverage experience.
Yep.
We had the capital, and it just went south, you know. And what I had to learn is, you know, money comes and money teaches you.
Mm.
You know, it was a very expensive lesson to learn. Very, very expensive. You know, till today, I still, you know, and obviously if there's legalities around it, you know, our legal team is not the cheapest around town,
yeah,
which is also just another investment as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So how quickly do you need to learn, and how quickly do you need to turn that around, you know?
Let's jump back a bit, because we have moved quite, it's been a frenetic pace in our conversation here. Let's slow down a little bit and let's go back into your history. Usa, as they say.
Doing my zen here.
Yeah, no. Let's go back and let's talk about your journey.
Right.
So you were saying you're a sportsman. Where did you begin to get that feeling like you could make it in business? So just talk us through the progress and the process.
Right. So funny enough, I got a bursary to study cricket, through cricket,
yeah,
to study at the University of Pretoria. It was really a partial bursary. Not my marks related by any chance, because I practically, yeah, matric was it's a foreign concept around.
Okay, so academics aren't your strong point.
No, they were. But okay. Matric was, it just went south. You know? I played a lot of provincial cricket and a lot of
Your focus was elsewhere.
So a lot of my cricket, a lot of cricket took over my life. Sports took over, and I could have gone. Well, not I could have. I went pro, and it just didn't work out purely because I was studying. You know, when I got to varsity, I studied BSc computer science.
Okay.
You know, in BSc, so just to explain to everyone, BSc, between financial maths and comp sci, or information technology and business management systems, you're the same until year three, where you have to branch out.
Mm.
So the financial guys go economy, financial maths, they then specialize.
Mm.
So that's
and BSc is 4 years, so exactly. You have that final specialist year. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's where you specialize finance to go into actuarial science, or it is, in fact, financial maths is actuarial science, just without the board exams.
Mm.
So then I studied financial maths and computer science, I obviously went the computer science or information technology with business management subjects.
Mm.
And there came a point where I had to choose. Was it going to be sport, or was it going to be, you know, the sciences, call it that. Because you couldn't.
How did you make that decision? I mean, that's tough, because you've got this career that is burning within you, this sport career, and this passion.
Yeah.
And it really is a passion. I take exception to that word. I don't like that word very often. But in this particular instance, because you are pushing yourself to that level and that extent, it's clear it's a passion.
Yeah. It had to come to that point where you thought, okay, am I going to continue trying to make the SA team, or am I going to try and give it a go education-wise?
Mm.
You know, what can I fall back on? You know,
what's going to last? What's the investment going to last?
You know, so I had a conversation with the old man, very quick telephonic conversation. He was like, "Well, young man, I see your talents as a sports person, but I see your talents more on the education side, because, you know, Monday to Friday, you're literally playing a 4-day game, you know, on cricket, and you know, BSc is very. It requires you to be very, very focused on exactly what it is that you're doing. You know, so
you're doing it for a reason. There's definitely
exactly,
a reason.
Exactly. You know, so you can't really just get to varsity and just play sports, or do the other way. So I made a call to say, you know, look, let me play a bit of casual sport, you know, and let me then continue on this forefront.
And then, so you've got the casual sport. You've had the conversation with your father.
Yeah.
When did the business acumen side suddenly hit you?
Whilst I was studying, funny enough, you know, the studies really, really, they really challenged me, and they really pushed me to the next level. And I realized, you know, when I was studying, I started working for such cool brands like Tux FM.
Okay.
I was
suddenly you begin to start touching that world.
Right.
The context starts to build.
Correct. And I wasn't young, so I didn't go straight to varsity. I went and studied my A+, my BS, MCSE at the university of then called Midrand.
Okay.
So it was really. I wasn't young, so I wasn't getting there fresh, you know, with ideologies of only doing school. Mm. You know, I needed to fend for myself because, you know, I
the realities of life suddenly.
I moved from a working environment to being a student. Mm. So that kind of catapulted me to go to the next level of saying, how am I going to make money? You know, Tux FM, there's parties, there's radio, you know, there's production, you know.
It's exciting.
It's exciting, you know.
But is it viable? Is it lasting?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And which is why I needed to stay focused on the schooling to get it done and to, you know. So I was lucky. I met some really cool people, some really good friends who were really focused, who were straight A students.
Mm.
You know, you can't hang around straight A students and
not have it rub off.
And not have it rub off.
What is that? What's that saying? You are the average or the sum. I don't know. Some I've heard it differently. Of the five people you spend the most time with.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just happens.
And it happens. And they were cool people. Yeah. You know, they were really cool people. Mm. You know, the coolness wasn't how drunk we could get, but the coolness was, let's have a quality of life. You know, we did triathlons, we did all sorts of activities, and they were active people.
Mm.
And they took their schooling seriously, and they were just clever people. So it couldn't not rub off. You know, so then I started working for Red Bull energy drink, and that also exposed me to a lot.
Mm.
You know, I think exposure is everything. Expose your kids and your friends to as much as possible so that you too could then get exposed to other different things, you know. So exposure for me helped me, you know, traveling with, even with the cricket, you used to travel a lot. So you used to see a lot. You used to meet a lot of different people. And that, I think, changed my thinking.
Well, who was I with the other day? Her name's Dr. Kelly Sloan. She has an undergraduate degree from Columbia, a PhD from MIT, and then an MBA from a business school, Henley Business School.
Yeah.
And so she has all of these things, and she's into neuroscience and how people think and how people make decisions. CEOs, just incidentally on this, CEOs think differently to their peers.
Yeah.
They actually neurologically, and they did this, they made them make decisions alongside their peers in an environment where they could measure their brain waves and brain patterns.
Yeah.
They actually think differently. So I'm assuming you're one of those that think differently. But anyway, my point is that she said what you have to do is get outside of your world.
Right.
And that, I think, is what you're saying here.
Yeah.
So you can think differently, you can see differently, you can process differently.
Exactly. You know, I always quote this, in all your ways, get what? Get understanding.
Mm.
And I won't move from a particular subject until I have an understanding of it. Mm. It doesn't mean I agree with it or I disagree with it. It just means I have an understanding or a point of reference for where A, that person needs to go, or B, where the company needs to go. You know, so that is often a key driver for me, is get understanding, get knowledge. You know, I know what I know. What I know is not going to go away.
Mm. And often when you know so much, you also know how much you don't know about a particular situation.
Thank you.
And where the gaps are.
Yeah.
And you plug the gaps with resources like people.
Yeah.
I hate to objectify a person like that way, but that's business.
That's it. And my job is not really about me, because if it becomes about me, then I've missed the boat.
Mm.
It becomes about what I need to establish, what are the points that we need to deliver. And yes, you know, for me, CEOs are crazy people. They really, really are crazy. You got to be crazy to do crazy things, you know, to get crazy results as well, you know. One of the guys I'm very close to is the ex-CEO of African Bank, Leon Kirkenes.
Okay.
And Leon is... he's a nutter.
Well, African Bank has a fascinating story in and of itself, and him at the helm, you'll know.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he's a nutter, and not in a good or bad way, but you can't do what he does and just be normal.
Mm.
You know, and for me, you know, everyone speaks, the houses, his worth, his net worth, blah, blah, blah. The first question I asked him is, how did you come back from being such a failure in everyone's eyes, you know, because that's how people now see you.
Mm.
But you started this, you know. They fired you from the own company that you started.
Yeah.
And those
Steve
are the
Jobs kind of story.
Yeah. Mm. And those are the stories for me that I want to hear. I don't want to hear of your success stories. Not that success doesn't matter, but we've got enough success looking at us in the eyes. It's how do I bounce back?
You don't want to know about net worth. You want to know about value.
I want to know about value. I want to know how you got there and who did you cross and do I need to cross anyone to get there? You know?
Yeah, great questions.
You know, so for me, it wasn't a really an average conversation about how well I'm doing and stuff and his houses and what he's acquired.
BC, I'm going to interrupt you because the time is moving fast and I'm going to ask you, who have you crossed in order to get where you are today? And it's a rhetorical fun question. You don't actually have to tell me.
Yeah. But if I tell you, I have to kill you.
Oh, is that what happens with
that? That's what happens.
Okay, let's move the conversation away from that idea then. Black Life magazine.
Yes.
It's quarterly.
Black Life quarterly. Yes.
That's just celebrated 10 years. Congratulations.
Thank you. Round of applause for myself.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah.
And just tell us about that journey very quickly. I mean, where did it start? So 10 years ago, how old were you and what was
I'm
going
on? I'm not giving away my age,
fine,
G. Yes, I'm not.
Fine. Then how did it start? Just talk us through that process in a nutshell.
In a nutshell. So black is an idea of... It comes from the soul.
Mm.
And it's very difficult for me to explain it, but it was founded on understanding where the black person comes from. We know where we come from, but who knows where we're going?
Mm.
You know, and for me that it's more of a futuristic. How do we see ourselves?
Identity evolution maybe.
Correct. Okay. You know, it initially became a color thing, but it wanted to correct the past of how people see themselves.
Mm.
You know, has anyone ever encapsulated this bold African?
Mm.
You know, and it's not about a color thing. You know, for me, it's not. It's how do Africans see themselves?
Well, I think half the problem that we have sometimes in our country is that people see identity not as who you really are, but what you look like.
Exactly.
And I think that's what I'm hearing you say.
Stigma.
Take the conversation away from the color. You have to sometimes use the color to pull them in.
Exactly.
Hence the
brand.
You're
clever.
But then pull it to who can you become now?
Exactly.
What is your real identity?
Right. And you know... Africa has so many stories, man. We're such storytellers, you know, and we have amazing stories, you know. Not each of us have the same upbringing or you know, we don't have a consistent line of saying this is our lineage, this is where we come from. And, you know, we have a lineage of struggles, of victories, of, you know, the Maponyas, for example. I'll just make a very silly example, you know, Richard Maponya. The assumption was we never had any people race horses. You know, he was a breeder of race horses. Mm. You know, and that for me is amazing.
Mm.
You know, he was a township man, and yet the assumption was, and I say it's an assumption, that townships always had poor people.
Mm.
I mean, here we had a wealthy person who was breeding horses but still stayed in the township, you know. So that kind of thing for me was very critical. You know, we all have our stories. We're not all Mandelas, but we all contributed somewhere along the line to whatever struggle, to whatever victories. You know, there's also victories that we didn't celebrate, you know. And that black was encapsulating all of that into one, you know.
Almost a consolidation of.
Exactly. Mm. And telling our story, telling our narration, you know, giving a new narration to the story, giving the African story for the Africans by Africans.
Yeah, a voice.
A voice, exactly.
A voice that, which is uniquely my own.
Exactly. Mm. And how it was founded, once again, the old man was very critical, you know. He used to say, if you want to hide something from a black man, Put it in a book.
Yeah. Well, look, I've heard nuances of that as well.
Yeah.
So you want to hide something from anyone, perhaps, nowadays, put it in a book. Yeah.
Now, the new modern way is you want to hide something from someone, put it in chapter 6 of the book, because we never ever get to, you know.
We've got a nice library now.
Exactly.
But only chapter 1 or chapter 2. Yeah,
exactly.
Like
so that's what Black really encapsulated, you know. It was publishing African stories. And for Africans and by Africans, and that's where we pride ourselves, you know. At the moment now, there's a guy who, you know, does African cartoons, you know, superheroes, you know, converting our superheroes, making, you know, people that I grew up aspiring to look like and be into superheroes, you know. And that for me was the critical part of the journey. You know, let's capture our stories. Let's write them down. Let's put them in books. Let's have a library of all these stories, you know. And Yeah, that's the publishing story.
I love it, though. I love the idea that in order to help someone grow, you have to establish at least a baseline of identity.
Yeah.
And real identity. Because if it's just about race, if it's just you're black, where do you evolve to
exactly.
from there? If I'm just white, where do I evolve to from there?
Exactly.
But I'm not just white. You're not just black.
No.
You and I'm me. But what does that mean? And I think that's the question you were asking. And I like
I'm saying it's going to sound very blasé, but there's people who did pave the way for us to look over color.
Mm.
You know, they really did. Because it would be very, very limited in terms of mindset to think that those people struggled for me not to have this freedom today.
Mm.
You know, and we need to pay homage to that. It doesn't mean now it stops there. Now, you and I are faced with a different kind of struggle. Mm. You know, it's no longer can I chill with Gareth or can Gareth chill with me. Now it's become can Gareth afford to chill with me afford to hang out with Gareth?
Yep. You know, this is a critical point that we're actually at.
Yeah, yeah. It's an economic, not crisis. Crisis is the wrong word, but it's an economic symbiosis that I'm aspiring to be there. So I don't care how or who gets. I just want to get there.
Mm.
Now it might not be a color thing. You know, so that for me is really removing the stigmas of those kinds of things to make sure that we deal on a platonic level.
Mm. Oh, we deal with facts versus perception.
There we go.
No, I like that there a lot. We go. Okay, so that's publishing.
Yeah.
We usually have half hour conversations. This is such a fantastic conversation. I think we should just carry on going. if you're okay with that.
I'm okay. You got any more guests? That's the problem.
No, we want you.
Oh,
so we're gonna stay here.
A
with
man
you.
After my heart.
That's publishing. You also, what came first? Let's talk about which business came first, and then we can just how did you move from that first business into these other businesses? What was first?
So Black Life was first.
Okay, so that was specifically designed to be a monthly magazine?
Correct.
Almost in you know, these large Marie Claire, Men's Health, whatever
there
it is.
There we
go. That was what you wanted to line up next.
Correct,
to.
Correct.
It became quarterly?
Yeah, purely because, you know, our audience, and I'm going to say this very loosely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, initially you bring a product that you want to cater for a certain target audience.
Sure.
And then the target audience says, but this is not our point of reference. So it had to take us time to get to an understanding of what our audience actually wants.
A real understanding,
you know. And we got, in fact, I got my aha moment last year, you know, where it was, listen, I think if you structure it like this, you know, structure it into a quarterly. Guys don't have time to read magazines monthly.
Mm.
So we did our own research, and the research was people read, or men read primarily for three things. The first one that came, it was sex or porn.
Mm-hmm. Pictures,
yeah.
Yeah.
But obviously you and I, you know, don't, you know, no.
No, it's not, no interest.
No, well, absolutely none.
Yeah.
And the next one was business.
Mm.
And the other one was sports. But within business, they kind of said how to make your next rand. So people read, for example, the Financial Mail on how to understand the markets in order for them to see where they fit in.
Yeah.
So we are functional readers.
Mm.
So what am I doing monthly trying to show you stories that you're not in the, you know, we're in the business of lifestyle.
Mm.
And having an understanding of that is, it takes time. You know, to build your own look and feel, your own aesthetic, how you want people to perceive you.
Yeah.
It takes time to do that. So why am I trying to rush it every month, trying to meet the deadline of you know, advertisers and printers and all those things? Meanwhile, this guy wants to take his time.
Mm.
He wants to understand.
It's about making quality decisions over there quantity of decisions.
There we go. Mm. And that was basically the reason, you know, a lot of people. And then we thought, actually, whilst we're at it, we might as well make it world class.
Mm.
You know, we don't want to.
Might as well.
We might as well, you know? Because we didn't drop from going monthly or bi-monthly because of a financial thing. It was a quality thing.
Mm.
And let's give the quality when people are ready and let's give it to them in the way that they understand.
And they want to consume it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's Black Life Quarterly.
Yeah, so we then started publishing other magazines. You know, we started publishing in bus magazines for Translux, City to City, Department of Transport, their transport magazines and stuff. And we then became this publishing house for other stories, you know. And then other people started giving us their stories. So it just came... It just kept building on top of each other.
Did people come to you? Did you have to go out and do that? Was it a conscious effort to become a publisher like that?
No.
Or rather, did they see a quality product, perhaps?
Exactly.
And say, let's find who is producing this, who's publishing, and we'll contact them.
You know how many people I've met from just that to say, listen, we love what you're doing here. Please come and do it for us. And that's how it really, you know, everyone...
It's amazing when you do something really well, how things can... turn into something that you didn't see before.
I can't tell you.
It's like, always chasing.
It's chased. I mean, just on my way here, driving here, I got this call. I don't know how you got my number. Mm. This guy says to me, you know, you don't remember me, but when I met you, it's my birthday today. Mm. When I met you, I was picking up chairs at one of your events and you were speaking to your staff. Mm. He says to me, what you said to your staff made me who I am today.
Oh,
I'm 30. Mm. And you don't know what you've done for me, but you've really helped South Africa, and I'm not going to tell you who I am, but I'm going to tell you what I've done. Mm. You know, and it is my birthday and I just want to thank you. And he just went on, and you know, for me I was like, okay. You know, if the product that we take out duplicates itself, and the relationships that have met in on our platforms and within our platforms, then job well done. Mm. You know, I'm in the people investment category, you know. And sometimes very conventional, very unconventional, you know. It gets me into trouble a lot of times.
Okay.
It gets me into a lot of trouble. Because
I'm eager to hear some trouble stories.
Good
but
Lord.
Not right now, maybe.
Yes,
but
yes.
Think about one, maybe we'll come back to it.
Awesome.
I want us to move. So you went from Black Life magazine, which was a monthly.
Yeah.
It's now morphed. It's changed. It's evolved, which is appropriate.
Right.
Of course, all things must grow and change, especially, again, 10 years. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's move on to then the next business. So you're suddenly this publisher.
Yeah.
How did you then get into, and what is that next? What's into what?
Whew. Have you got all year?
I've got all year.
Okay. I like future CEOs. So it then moved into brands wanting to speak to this particular audience.
Okay.
And I suppose they thought that we had the solutions for those audiences that they wanted to. Those targeted audiences, those niche audiences, spending, you know, I suppose they termed it the Black Diamond at some stage,
sure.
The Unilever studies. But till today, I still have yet to meet a Black Diamond.
Mm.
I've yet to meet someone who's LSM XYZ, you know. So they started then classing us into, so for example, what's your LSM reader, you know, from an advertiser perspective?
Of course, that's
and we
a
had
question.
A problem with that, because those living standards measures said that you needed to have a smartphone and you needed to have a fridge in order for you to fall into LSM X, for example. What that doesn't explain is, does that fridge have food in it?
Mm.
Does that smartphone have airtime? Does it have data?
Yeah. What's the real buying power?
What's the real buying power?
Or what's the real... I don't want to diminish it just to buying power. It's what about the aspirations of that individual?
Exactly.
Where are they moving to? Where are they going to be in a year?
Right.
And are you positioning yourself correctly for them when they have the buying power?
Correct. So that's what we started addressing. So
let me just quick. This is Brand Contact Consultants.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So we started a company called Brand Contact Consultants to then speak directly into brands and how they contact certain, you know, individuals and certain target audiences. And it has so evolved, G, to a point where, you know, I wouldn't like to call us an agency, but we're a little, not little even anymore, we're a very intimate group of people that are just really trying to do cool things, you know, and work with cool brands and develop brands and grow brands, you know. Africa still is more forgiving when you start out a brand. You know, I mean, I look at Tash's and what Natasha's done from that perspective, you know. So being able to grow brands and to introduce that, we're still very open to that, you know. There's a guy called Victor Khomeswano who I happen to share a birthday with, and he always says, you know, Africa, he wrote a book called Africa is Open for Business. And you know that,
I know the title at least.
So you know, I'm in that business of trying to develop African brands that we can then transport, you know, to other continents and to other countries, that we can proudly put that, you know, proudly African mentality and even the love and the passion that we bring, you know. African people are very passionate people, you know, and that we share that platform. So the platforms that we've created, you know, and the brands that we work with is to make sure that we share the message of what Africa can do and what Africa is and who South Africa is in particular within that space.
Again, I'm hearing this incredible evolution, this morphing, this this change, this growth. Yeah. So, because, of course, Brand Contact Consultants, I'm getting it right.
Correct.
That would have started as just this almost, I'm going to diminish it, I'm sorry, a little bit of a in-between brokering kind of thing.
We were brokers.
Yeah, and then
flat-out brokers.
But now it's evolved. There's a story behind it. There's a desire behind it. It's moved into a space where you are growing your own brands.
Yeah. Fantastic. So it's, you know, it's identifying the areas and growing those brands. It really is that simple.
Now, I do want us to talk about some of your other businesses and how they've, because there's more. it's phenomenal there's more, and I'm so grateful that there's more, especially for a guy like you. No, because we do. There are a lot of people that we follow. You're one of those people, and whenever we see successes, we clap hands. Other people, we don't clap hands. But, but you, we clap hands. But let's just quickly talk about the journey, and I want to frame it with this word of patience.
Right.
So this stuff hasn't happened for you overnight.
No.
And so if someone goes into your LinkedIn profile, they're going to see 10 years with the brand development there.
Yeah.
There's going to be 10 years with Black Life magazine.
Right.
These other businesses that you're busy with, they're going to evolve and grow and establish themselves. So just talk us through this idea of patience.
Sure.
And maybe some of the hard knocks on your head as you've been impatient trying to get through that those barriers.
Sure. I think if there was a summation of what every person who's building a business requires, is patience, all in caps lock, shouting. You know, patience is one of those things that you need every day. And if you open to learning and you've got your tentacles up, you know, John Maxwell always says you got to look for opportunities to learn and to grow. But with that comes patience. And an understanding, you know, for me, I take a lot of, so when we started the publishing, our intention was not to open a publishing house. But through that patience, we then opened a publishing house.
Yeah, it became.
It became, you know, and we allowed ourselves to become, you know, and it's still growing, you know, like. Now we've got different advertisers. I mean, I'm going to brag about this, but now you know, we've got Breitling straight from Switzerland that's now booking with us.
Fantastic.
You know, it's taken us 10 years to get money that we should have, you know, and I never understand it. When you're in it, you never understand it because you're busy in it. And, you know, there's so many sayings that go around in business that they've got to start coming alive for you personally.
And if they're not, if they don't mean anything, then it just tells you where you're at.
Exactly. You know, so there's one in particular that always says, you know, you've got to, you really have to be patient with, good things come to those who wait. You know, and I still haven't received all the good things yet, purely because I'm still walking this walk, you know, and you get humbled every day, you know. I look at a lion in the jungle, you know. We see this pretty picture. But when you see them and how battered and bruised they are just to fight for a territory, you know, it kind of sobers you up to saying that this is a war, you know. It's not a war against Gareth in particular, but it's a war against what your own mind has preconceived and where you want to see yourself and how much of it is it going to take for you to now fight through all of that and consistently. I think if there's a word that I've learned that has become part of my DNA is the consistency. Even when I don't want to learn it, even when I don't want to learn it, you know, it is that consistency, you know, consistency to get up quickly. You know, black hasn't always been where it should be, but the consistency of getting up, publishing, showing up, making sure that we produce content, world-class content, it always is top of mind.
I forget who his name, and I'm sad I forget his name, but I did the interview with the CEO, the founder and CEO of the largest networking, business-to-business networking group in the world, BNI.
Right.
And it was a phenomenal little gem that he dropped, but he said to me, Gareth, you must understand, I didn't do 1,000 things once.
Yeah.
I did 1,000 thing, one thing 1,000 times over, and
right.
That's why we're having this conversation today.
Yeah.
And that's what consistency really is.
It really is. You know, being consistent even when you don't want to be. You know, even when you don't have a rand in your account or you have 100 million in your account.
Mm.
It's that level of consistency that you need and that grit, you know. I almost see it's like a bull terrier or these terrier dogs that just keep at you.
Mm.
You know, they're going to keep coming at you. You know, they just keep coming. And that's what business needs. Because when you least expect it, that's when you get that, you know, that break. Or it's when you probably have even thrown in the towel.
Mm.
You know, I throw in the towel every day. Every single day I throw in the towel, you know. And I always say, you know, social media is the enemy of people developing their businesses. Mm,
That's because such a great tool.
I look
tool,
at Gareth and I'm thinking, yo, Gareth is doing well. You know, next thing Gareth asks me for 5 rand.
Mm.
And he's the one who's got 1,000 followers and I've got 2 followers, you know. So that currency is very, very fickle.
Mm, I agree.
You know, I always say, if you want to be in business, stay away from social media.
Mm.
Unless social media is your business. You
but
know?
It's a tool.
Yeah.
If you can use it for the right reasons, then you're okay.
Yeah.
But if you get personally involved in it, as I think what you're describing here, then you're in real. You can find yourself in some deep water quite quickly.
Oh, very quickly. You know, so fail every day and acknowledge that was a failure. And you know, acknowledge that you really, really have a lot to learn, A, and B, for me, I've never lost.
So that's a great point, because I wanted to ask this question earlier. Have you made profit from day one?
No.
Okay, so talk us through that evolution.
Gee, I'm so heavily geared, it's not funny.
Okay.
You know, it's a season as well, you know. If you had asked me in 2013, would I be where I am today? The answer is no. You know, I don't know if you know that speech by Matthew McConaughey that he did for the Grammy, the last Grammy that he just won.
No, I'm unfamiliar, but I must watch it.
Oh, I tell you.
Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. And he was saying there's 3 things in his life that he aspires to. One, he looks up. He looks up to his heavenly father, his greatest scientist, who, you know, without him, he wouldn't be where he is.
I love that description, greatest scientist.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. And then that's what it is.
Yeah, because he created all these things that he's, you know, it's a maths equation. That's how he sees it.
No,
you know?
Exactly.
And what he looks forward to, so he looks up to God.
Mm.
He looks forward to the people that that are in his life that really change it. His wife, his mom, his dad, his children, you know, that he looks forward to spending time, you know. And the thing that he most aspires to or looks forward to, in fact aspires to, that was the 3rd thing. This got me into tears. Like, I started crying like I was a little child.
Not now, though.
No. I'm going to try not to.
Okay,
without, you know? Where's the tissues?
I don't think I can handle that kind of thing in studio.
And the thing that he aspires to, the one person actually once asked him, so who's your role model? And he couldn't answer the question. You know, a couple of months later, the guy asked him again, so who's your role model? And he actually came up, he said, it's me in 10 years' time.
Mm.
So he was 15 at the
That's
time.
Beautiful.
And he says, I'll never catch up to that guy. You know, I don't know what that guy has in store for me, but I look forward to him in 10 years' time again.
Mm.
You know, so he got to 35. He said, so who's your role model? And he says, it's me in 10 years' time again.
Mm.
He says, you'll never catch that guy. You'll never be that guy and see that's what keeps him going. Because him in 10 years is him having have progressed from one to another, to another, to another. And that really got me, you know, because that's what we all aspire to.
You know, what's so interesting about that comment is earlier, as we were speaking about patience, I thought, what's the enemy of patience? Yep. And really, in my mind, what the enemy of patience is, or why you wouldn't be patient, is because you lack strategy.
Mm.
You lack a five-year goal, and whatever it is that you've worked out, you're going to need from a day-to-day basis, month-to-month basis, those milestones in order to achieve that. And I think that's what I hear you saying here with Matthew, is that he sees that person who's 5 or 10 years away, 15 years away, and he realizes that there's going to be a certain kind of effort that is required to become that.
Exactly.
And maybe he misses the mark. Maybe he becomes less, or maybe he becomes more. Who knows?
Yeah.
But what he is doing is he's working out a plan, a strategy, and part of that plan or strategy or formula is patience.
And that's where I personally don't believe in mentors, but I believe in a collective people that sharpen you. You know, for example, you know, we have a car guard there by the office that kind of looks after cars, because we're next to call it a shopping center of some sort. And the stories that guy comes with are amazing, you know. And sometimes I think, if I could use that or say this to that person, this would then, you know, I'm always plotting, always prodding, always, you know, I've got 1,000 things that I try, and God forbid one of them comes off just for the day, you know, and celebrate that little victory to say, yeah, you know, today I was with Gareth and he really made me go inside of me to get to an understanding, because I'm so busy doing, I don't actually recall all the projects that we're doing, you know. And it's difficult for me to highlight them and really bring them to the fore, because I'm still in the trenches, you know. And that's,
and you will be for a long time.
Will be for a long time, you know. And it's not my bank account that determines that I'm out of the trenches, you know. Because a lot of people think that once you've got the money, then you're out of the trenches. No, it's, have I achieved what I've come to do? So are there enough people around me that are prospering from what I'm doing? Therefore, that, you know, am I prospering around those people that I see as people that are going to grow my brand and grow the business? So, you know, I'm a bit
philosophical.
That's the word, you know. But you practice those things every day for them to become rhema, true.
But they are truths. You know, there's nothing wrong with... I think there's people that wax philosophical, and we don't want that. We want people that can take what they do every day and turn it into practical philosophy.
But
and I think that's what I'm hearing.
We complicate things.
I agree.
You know, my motto is, it's got to be so simple anybody can do it, because you know we just, common sense is become a rare commodity. You know, so it's those things that in business that you try and practice every day. You practice, you know, speaking to the people. How am I speaking to them? Am I growing them? Am I selfishly looking out for their ambitions, not for my own ambitions? Because I know for a fact that if I look after their ambitions, if I sow into their ambitions, I'm going to reap that.
Yeah, because they're in your environment.
They're in my environment.
Yeah, they're part of the collective. That
so
is your ambition.
So create the environment. Mm. Create the environment. Make sure that people are there. Create Cliff Central. It's the first of its kind. Make sure that, you know, people can then translate into their own Cliff Centrals, you know, whatever that means. So for me, it's that, let's plant, you know, and let's see what we reap. You know, I got to knowingly know that if I give G 10 Rand today, tomorrow I want 20 Rand. It's not a theory. It's something that you and I have worked towards.
Yeah.
It's something that you've guaranteed that this is what we plan to do. So that's really the simplicity of what I try and do on the daily. But the war is real, man. You know, we don't have enough mascots telling us you can do it. You know.
Well, I was just thinking to myself that you're always going to be in the trenches. And I know you are always going to be in the trenches, but the landscape will change.
Yeah.
The battle will be different. And not necessarily negative.
No,
I think people mustn't.
No.
When you say war, and I mean, these are not negative terms. It speaks to the manner in which you engage the environment that you're in.
Exactly. You know, and when you want to change the aesthetic or the landscape of a specific business sector, it needs you to understand that there's going to be resistance from people who have been doing it their way forever.
Forever, absolutely. You know? And they want to hold that close to themselves.
They hold it dear, you know.
It's their bread and butter
exactly.
sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I really used to take offense when someone said to me, yeah, but we've been doing it like this for years and it's worked and you know, I've been in this industry for 100 years. And you know what? I used to say, oh, just shut up and let's do it differently, right? But the more I'm growing into this thing, and the more I have compassion for other people, right? Because my compassion changes every day, literally. You know, my threshold, my people threshold does change. And a lot of people don't, you know, some days I'm like, don't mess with me. You know, and that's not the word I wanted to use.
Sure.
But where I'm going with this is the honest truth to say, okay, let me give you that respect of saying you've been doing it for X amount of years. How do I take what you've been doing right, you know?
So what you know.
So how do we take what worked in radio? Let's bring it to digital. You know, people won't see this now. They'll listen to this podcast 5-10 years from now and like, Gareth was on to something. You know, and that's what we need. You know, being understood for today might not really be it, but let us then practice that for tomorrow, for example.
Do you know, I'm going to have to interrupt you there. This has been a fantastic conversation. I haven't had an hour conversation with someone for a very long time. That has been so enriching and rewarding. And I'm not even joking. I'm being and this is not hot air. This is, thank you.
Stop it, thank Gareth. You. I like it.
No, thank you. We really have, I know, and when I say we, I mean myself. Yeah. I know Klubi will be listening.
Yeah.
I know that our future CEOs, listeners are listening and really taking something from this. So thank you. A valuable conversation. Before you go, we'll ask a question that we ask everyone.
Right.
Which is, when you, if you rather, could go and speak to the 20-year-old you.
Yeah.
Go back and talk to that future CEO you. What would you say to yourself?
That's really interesting. I was hoping you weren't going to ask me to go back.
Yeah, we have to go back.
Keep at it. Just keep at it. You know, it turns the seasons. You know, we get winter, we get summer, we get autumn, we get spring. Keep at it. The seasons are never the same. And you know, just keep honoring. You know, just keep doing it. Just take one day at a time. You know, the sun sets every day and every day is a new day. Keep at it.
And I need you to understand, if you're listening to this podcast, that those, that advice, the words of wisdom that we've heard today really are from someone I regard as a mogul. And I love that word. It's because it's something that you're becoming every day. Yeah. And so thank you for being who you are. Thank you for sharing your journey with us and some of your insights. And we look forward to clapping hands further down the line. When we said, it's been great to have you in studio. And thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And hello to Klubi.
Oh, yes.
Schlubi.
She's down at the, probably right now on stage, talking future, all things future CEO at the Durban ICC. So, we hope that's going well. Anyway, we're going to be back same time, same place next week. This kind of quality conversation. I can't promise because this was really great, but we'll do our very best. Same time, same place next week. We'll see you then. CliffCentral.com.